Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan, and thank you for joining me for the 8th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants and refugees. Together, we will visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today's guest is Reza Jalali. Reza is coordinator of multicultural student affairs at the University of Southern Maine, and he is also an esteemed teacher, writer, playwright, community organizer, and Muslim scholar. Originally from Iran, he has called Maine home for over 20 years now. Thank you for being my guest today on New Mainers Speak, Reza.
Thank you, Kate.
So you were born and raised in Iran. Can you tell me what life was like there for you and your family in the 60s?
Well, this is during the Cold War era when the government in Iran was a good friend of the U.S., in fact, one of the most important U.S. allies in the region. And so as such, we grew up with access to American radio, American TV, and watching Hollywood movies. So you could say that I had this kind of perhaps distorted image of life in America, because Hollywood really does not give you an accurate picture. Back then, I thought that every American gets to live in this very large mansion and so much money, and life was normal. We were Kurds, and as a ethnic minority, life was not really easy for us. I knew something was wrong in my society when I was told that at my school I could not speak Kurdish, which is the language of Kurds, and that we had to speak in Farsi or Persian, the national language of Iran, that my parents would get into trouble if I were to speak Kurdish. So I knew there was something wrong, that we're being treated as shadows in our own land where we had lived for thousands of years.
Am I to understand correctly that the Kurdish community is about 5% of Iran?
Absolutely. And the numbers really are not that exact, because most of these governments with Kurdish population refuse to come up with an exact number in terms of census and collection of data. And they're really paranoid that if they were to give the exact number, that perhaps they would ask for more rights. In fact, in Turkey, for years, Turkish government refused to acknowledge they had a minority called Kurdish. They would refer to them as the mountain Turks, quote unquote.
Oh. So about what year was this when you realized you weren't allowed to speak Kurdish in school anymore?
Oh, I was very, very young. And I would say this was middle school, when there were signs in our classrooms saying that do not speak Kurdish. And then I started to write poetry, really bad poetry. I would happily disown it now, looking back. And I was also quite active in the anti-Shah or anti-government politics. So my family left, felt concerned for my safety and encouraged me to leave the country. And I went to India to continue my studies.
And that was around college time?
Around college time, a bit earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So I did my undergraduate and some of my graduate work in India. And I had every intention of going back to Iran, like tens of thousands of other Iranian students who were studying all over the world, including the United States, including University of Maine in Orono. And we all wanted to go back and rebuild the country and help to rebuild the nation. But meanwhile, a revolution happened in 1979, the so-called Islamic Revolution of 1979, when the Shia fundamentalists came to power. And soon, a year later, Iran-Iraq war started, and I could not go back. I was a stateless person in my early 20s.
Is that when you made your way to Maine?
That's when I came to Maine, and I arrived on Memorial Weekend, 1985. Two things I found really odd and strange about the United States. And one, it was the Memorial Weekend, and as such, there were flags everywhere. But I was not aware of that, that this had something to do with the long weekend. So there were flags everywhere, top of every tree and every pole, and I mean everywhere. And I thought, wow, Americans love their flags. The other odd thing was that being late May, and if you have survived a long winter, and if it's slightly warm, then everyone, most people were in semi-nude states, and men with hairy chest and hairy backs, there should really be a law against that, and women in shorts. And here I was wearing a couple of sweaters because I'd just arrived from India, where weather is never part of the conversation. It's either hot or rainy. And so compared to the low 60s of late May in Maine, I just arrived from India, where it was routinely 90, 95, and 100. So it was intolerably cold. And I was wearing all my sweaters, and I must have been a sight. So all that to say, when I arrived in Maine, I was cold, I felt out of place, and really awful fashion, sense of fashion. And here, 20-something years later, I'm still cold, except a few days in July and August. I no longer feel out of place. This is home. I feel belonged and accepted for who I am. And well, the fashion is still, the jury's out on that.
Jury's out on the fashion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how did you pick Maine? You were in India. And I'm curious about that process. What caused you to get on a flight for Maine?
Well, refugees, I came as a political refugee, needless to say. Refugees really don't have a choice in where they go, unless they're joining a family member or friends or a community. And I did not know anybody in this country. So at the American Embassy in New Delhi, when I was told that I could go to the United States, there was this kind gentleman who gave me a book when he saw that I really had no idea where I was going to go. He gave me this book and he said, well, go to your hotel room and look at this book, and we might be able to help you to select a state. And I fell in love with Maine. All the pictures were of the coastal Maine, and of course, all these pictures were taken during the summertime. There should have been a disclaimer. And there was none. So I said, Maine. And the strange look in the guy's eyes should have told me something about my choice. No, I'm kidding. He actually thought that was a good move. And so Portland, Maine continues to be a refugee resettlement community, one of the few, there are not that many in the country. For that reason, and as such, refugees continue to arrive in Portland, Maine as we speak.
And when you arrived, what was it that you needed, and how did you go about finding it?
Well, I needed a job. By then I had two college degrees from India, from very good universities in India, and medium of instruction in Indian universities is in English. Not to suggest my English was perfect, but I had two degrees from English-speaking universities. I needed a job, and tough luck. Nobody would hire me. And I went to University of Southern Maine. I remember to an office in Gorham and gave copies of my transcripts and degrees, only to have them look at me and saying, we don't recognize these. You need to start from the scratch. And by the way, that to some extent, that response and that reaction continues to this day, which is quite heartbreaking. I have judges from Africa, doctors from Afghanistan, nurses from Sudan, teachers from Iran, who arrive with college degrees, and sadly, we don't recognize them, and we have no way of helping them to either continue the studies here beyond the degrees they've had, they've brought with them, or helped them to find a job. So job, really, job was the main part, and then finding my way to continue my studies, which I ultimately did, and I did my graduate, and I finally got my terminal degree in this country.
In what?
My first love, creative writing. And English is my second language, but I, as a writer, I enjoy playing with this language, and I love being mischievous and playful, as Rumi was with Farsi.
Yes.
And which was his first language, and then creating stories and telling the stories which need to be told, which otherwise would remain untold.
Well, thank you for bringing that up, and I have a treat for you coming right up. First, I want to make sure you know you're listening to WMPG, Southern Maine Community Radio, broadcasting from USM. I'm Kate Manahan, and this is New Mainers Speak. If you are just joining us, welcome. Today I'm having a conversation with Reza Jalali, originally from Iran. He works here at the University of Southern Maine as coordinator of multicultural student affairs. He's also the author of Homesick Mosque, a collection of short stories, and Moon Watchers, a children's book about the Muslim holiday Ramadan. And as a special treat for you today, he has agreed to read to you from Homesick Mosque, which I can tell you firsthand is one of the more beautiful pieces of literature I've read in a while. It's poetic prose, and I think you'll hear exactly what I'm talking about in just a moment. Can you tell us what you're going to read before you read it?
Well, first of all, you're so kind for calling it such a good piece of literature, and I'm biased. I have to agree with you. And but this collection of short stories which just came out a couple of months ago, it's called Homesick Mosque, and the name comes from the term that we use to refer to the shopfront mosques that Muslim immigrants have started in different cities across Maine. We have now 5 to 7 mosques, and I love to call them homesick mosques because they really don't look like a mosque. It's usually just a plain room, and sometimes they've turned a warehouse into a mosque, sometimes a storefront, and that's the name of one of the stories in the collection.
I think that story really fleshed out my understanding. I might not have considered the fact that people came from gorgeous architectural structures that they knew as their mosques that were home to all things beautiful. And then they come here and they're grateful to have a community, but it certainly is not the gorgeous mosque of their homes.
No minarets and no domes.
No. I'm sorry to say, maybe one day we'll have minarets and domes here in Portland. Mm-hmm. I think they're graceful and beautiful. So,
one of the stories that I would like to read from is about this retired Pakistani faculty member who used to teach in a private school somewhere in New England. And he has this is about his friendship with his neighbor. And his wife, the faculty member's name is Mr. Abdul. Mr. Abdul and his wife Taj have been good friends with this neighbor. And the friendship starts into running into difficulties because of the 9/11 and also the invasion of Iraq by the U.S. forces. And the story is about how in the post 9/11 America, not only the sense of security of Americans was shattered, but also the life turned upside down for many Muslim and non-Muslim immigrants, by the way, all those who were mistaken to be a Muslim. And people with Middle Eastern names, with Middle Eastern looks. And so this story deals with that. And if I may, I would start with introducing Mr. Abdul's wife to the readers. Her name is Taj. And then we would move on to the story itself. And Mr. Abdul is in the market to buy a used car. And the tension starts with the neighbor because the car has a sticker which says boldly, out of Iraq. So here's one, some excerpt. Why bother with a used car? Go out and buy a new Honda Accord, Taj advised him last night. He's envious of her ability. a gift he was not born with, to meet life's challenges with ease and adjust to changes around her with the flexibility of a chameleon. Mr. Abdul finds it odd that his wife somehow, still a mystery how, manages to behave as a carefree Westerner in public but lives the life of a content Pakistani housewife in private. Furthermore, he feels annoyed that she could handle the war news, which would make him brood for endless hours to come, with the same ease as selecting ripe mangoes that she picks at the local Vietnamese food store. The same night as they watched the evening news packed with coverage of a war that was going badly for all sides, he was outraged when images of dying children lying in bare metal beds in hospitals with walls stained with blood were shown. "We are responsible for this slaughter," he murmured. She sat there, calm as a cow, chewing on spiced almonds and gazing at him with her large brown eyes. "Collateral damage, caught at the wrong place at the wrong time, happens in every war," she said in a casual tone, oblivious to her husband's misery. In recent months, she had started to wear a stamp-sized flag pinned to her large bosom at where at work. "Bank's new policy. As a staff, we wear them to show our respect for the troops fighting overseas," she said the first time Mr. Abdul asked her about it. So the story continues, and he picks up this car with the sticker, and again they have had this friendship with the neighbor, and I'll read some parts.
And the bumper sticker is, again says what?
Out of Iraq.
Out of Iraq on the bumper.
And yes, mm-hmm. And unlike most of the neighbors in the subdivision, Mrs. Bernstein was a friendly one. She took Taj and her family under her wings from the time they moved to the two-story colonial. She treated Taj like a family member. And they watched over each other's children till they graduated from high school, went to college, and settled down in different parts of the country. During Eid celebration, at the end of Ramadan, Mrs. Bernstein and her husband were invited to elaborate Pakistani dinners prepared by Taj. In return, every Thanksgiving, the Bernsteins would invite them to their large and comfortable home, treating them to a traditional turkey dinner. On such occasions, Taj would cook chicken curry and rice, a favorite of Mrs. Bernstein, to bring as a contribution. So let's see what happens to that friendship now. We get to a page or two later. For his part, Mr. Abdul enjoyed Mrs. Bernstein's company. They discussed politics, international affairs in particular, since Mrs. Bernstein had a passion for world news. A loyal listener to the National Public Radio, she stayed informed about the events in the Middle East. Years before, when parts of Pakistan were shaken by a powerful earthquake, she came to ask if the families were okay. She offered to collect blankets and baby food for the victims. However, all that changed once the towers in New York came down on a beautiful fall day in September 2001. Overnight, her grief over the loss of lives and destruction of properties turned into resentment for everything Islamic. Despite her liberal views on most matters, she became a Muslim hater, who, starting with assuring Taj and her husband that her new viewpoint did not include them, as she saw them as modern Muslims, spoke passionately of the dangers that Islam, the backward faith of bearded men bent on killing non-Muslims, posed to the civilized West. She believed the threat, evil and foreign, had to be met with maximum force. "We have to teach them how to behave in a modern world," she said to Taj once in presence of Mr. Abdul, who almost opened his mouth to say something in response, but saw Taj's pleading eyes and went back to reading War and Peace. Over time, to Mr. Abdul's disbelief. She went from the person who felt sad when hearing of a child dying of AIDS in South Africa to a warmongering, elfin monster convinced of the need for the shock and awe strategy promoted by the administration to bring fear to the heart of every Muslim, young and old. Right after the invasion of Iraq, Mrs. Bernstein came to ask Taj to help her to tie yellow ribbons on every tree and the utility poles in the neighborhood. Mr. Abdul was secretly overjoyed when Taj refused to get involved. Since high school, when my best friend was taken to a Karachi police station and was never seen or heard of, I hate politics of every kind, Taj said with her husband looking on. How barbaric! She must have refused to wear the veil, Mrs. Bernstein asked with a look of disgust. What veil? What are you talking about? Never mind the veil. She was a communist, a Mao sympathizer. What? While in school, you had a communist for a friend? Mrs. Bernstein said. That was a long time ago. Back then, most young people were lefties, but not me, Taj said. In months to follow, Mrs. Bernstein started neighborhood drives to collect stuff that the troops in Iraq might be in need of. Chewing gum, M&Ms, magazines, and DVDs. She wore shirts decorated with stars and stripes and went door to door to ask for donations. Mr. Abdul, though unhappy with the war in Iraq, gave her a box of hard candies he had bought at CVS for this purpose. A local TV station ran a story to praise her patriotic efforts. Taj was excited to see her friend on television. I could call and tell her she looks good on TV, Taj said. Mr. Abdul frowned and harshed Taj, since he wanted to hear what Mrs. Bernstein was saying. We have to stay united to support our men and women in uniform who are fighting the Islamic evil, she said, her steely blue eyes staring at the camera as if publicly challenging Mr. Abdul's sense of loyalty to the post-September 11 America.
Thank you for reading that.
My pleasure.
Your character development in your stories is so intriguing to me, and I love that you would dive in and choose this story, because I think it's a conversation that would be a really good idea to have with our neighbors and our friends about when we see things on TV, how does that apply to the people we know, or what we think we know about the people we know?
Yeah, absolutely right. In general, there's so much name-calling targeting immigrants. There's this anti-immigrants sentiment that we see nationally in this country. We're being told day and night that refugees and immigrants come to Maine to stand in welfare lines. And I would say that this nation suffers from national amnesia. We forget that this is a nation of immigrants, that America, this beautiful country, was built with the sweat and blood of those who came before us, the Irish, the Italians, the Jews, the Armenians, the Greek, the Germans, the English. And to me, the arrival of the Sudanese and Somalis and the Iraqis and the Burmese and those who continue to come is just a continuation of that process.
Next chapter. I have before me three books that have your name on it, Homesick Mosque and Other Stories, which I purchased at USM's bookstore, and I loved every story in, but I think you can get it in other places, is that right?
Longfellow Bookstore as well, and other large bookstores.
You are also the person who wrote the foreword for the book New Mainers, and that was actually the inspiration for this show. So I thank you for that. I enjoy every minute of that book as well, and I would highly recommend that to listeners who have enjoyed what you've had to share here today if they want to know more about your story, because you really illuminated that in the foreword very nicely. And
thank you.
Moon Watchers, Shirin's Ramadan Miracle, is a children's book, and I loved it because I don't think in our mainstream culture we know much about Ramadan, that it moves, what goes along with it, and the giant celebration Eid at the end. And I loved how that made that accessible to children, and I hope that it's being read in libraries all over America.
We hope so.
One thing I wanted to ask you is if you have a favorite Persian writer who inspires you. You mentioned Rumi earlier. Sometimes I think your work sounds a little like it's influenced by Hafiz. But I wondered if you had inspiration from young life.
Well, too many to really list, and too many non-Iranian writers to list. But in my writing about immigrants and the heartbreaking stories of living the lives of not being there and not being here in betweenness, in the no man's land, really is highly influenced by writers such as Salman Rushdie, Jhumpa Lahiri. And Salman Rushdie made it okay for us to write about our pain. He gave us permission to write our own stories and make our voices heard.
It was a pleasure hearing your voice, both through your writing and here on New Mainers Speak today. Thank you for coming in and sharing your work with us.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
I hope you'll come back and have other conversations in the future.
I would look forward to that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You have been listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and I want to give special thanks to my guest, Reza Jalali, for joining me here today. And thank you for listening. Please join us each Sunday from noon to 12:30 for similar interviews with diverse members of our community. If you would like to hear this complete interview or interviews from previous weeks, please visit newmainersspeak.com. Next week, my guest will be Shelley Ann Miller. She came to this country to study at the age of 19 from the Republic of Trinidad and Tobago. She became a physician living in New York and Chicago and arrived in Maine just a year ago to practice internal medicine in Sanford, Maine. Please join us next Sunday to hear her immigration and assimilation stories.